Right, so these were the media we asked people about. Each of these media we wrote down on a little card, like a this little bit bigger than this, but and we gave these cards to people, asking them how important, how worthwhile is this particular the news medium mentioned on this card to you. And we asked people to put these cards on this grid. So this says, if they put a card, say television news, I'll put that over here, if they put television news plays a role in my life, the bigger the role it plays, the further to the right. And if for some people, let's say some old people who are not using mobile news, they would put the card with mobile over here, which is does not play a role in my life. And those that are sort of playing an in-between role, not too important, not too unimportant either, they would put those media in the middle. And we would give people all the 25 cards one at a time and ask them to put them down here. So people would typically not put, sorry, they would not put a card in a specific slot immediately. They would say, well, TV news belongs sort of over here, and they would just put it there. And some not very important media they would just put over here. And then finally, when they've got them all, they could sort of put this in place so that they would all fit. Let's just see if I go back. Yeah, so you see what I'm calling these cards elicitation cards. These cards become the interview guide for the dialogue that the interviewer is having with the informant. And then there comes the puzzle stage in which people negotiate the position on this grid that I showed you the on the other slide. What we get out of this exercise is that we get each foreman to create their own universe of worthwhileness of news media. They are showing us, by the way they place the cards, what their news universe looks like. Or if I go back to my metaphor from the beginning of this talk, this after doing the puzzle, shows what they have in their shopping cart. Then, as you can probably imagine, once you have this pattern with all the cards, and the cards have a number, then you can do the factor analysis and calculate the pattern of each informant, comparing that with the patterns of all the other 35 informants. So you get a typology out of this, which has to do with the worthwhileness of the media. So you get a typology. In our case, we got a typology with 7 types. And for each of those types, distinguished by the factor analysis program, we get a top 25, a list of the media in the sequence in which they have importance for this group. So for each group, the list of the 25 media, which is characteristic of that particular group, we could call the worthwhileness profile, and we then have to interpret it. What does it mean for each of the 7 factors or groups? If we sort of analyze ourselves in our use of this method, we have to say, well, what do we gain by using this method? Well, we gain something in the reliability of the typology. Many researchers also create typologies on the basis of qualitative analysis alone. So you just do your interviews, you make transcripts, and you analyze the transcripts. And then you try to find out if your human eye, with your human brain, can see patterns in the transcripts. So you have 35 informants. Each transcript is 20 pages, and you try to see the patterns in those 1,000 pages. I think that this can be very difficult to do. I'm very much a qualitative researcher myself, and I've done typologies in this manner. But I have a kind of doubt that I can really see all the differences and similarities between so many people and so many news media patterns. So I talk about, I think you could say that the human brain may have a limited computational capacity for seeing patterns. So I rely on the computer through the factor analysis to give me more computational power, if you like. And because the patterns that are coming out of this exercise can be compared very reliably by the statistical program. So I gain reliability in the pattern. I lose something too. I lose a little bit, I think, of validity, because some people feel that by doing this, it does not quite fit their news universe. They feel like by forcing them to do this pattern, I'm doing a little bit violence to their news universe. So this is, if there is a small lack of fit, that of course is a validity issue. And this is what I hear called, that there is a straitjacket. Some people feel that this forcing them to do this is a little bit of a straitjacket. And this is also what I comment on here, because after each interview we ask people, well, please tell us, how was this experience? What did you think? And most people tell us this was fun. They like it because they come to this interview and they think, I'm just going to talk to this researcher and he will talk to me for an hour, and I talk and talk and talk. And then they find out that when we've got halfway through the interview, I put out this big diagram in front of them with this pattern, and I tell them the cards, and they say, now we're going to play. And most people think this is good, and they like that. So that's fun. Most people think it's fun, but some people think, I'm not completely pleased with the pattern. And I think this is an important, but the reason why I'm mentioning this is that when you're doing, well, whatever kind of method you use, you have to be very self-reflective about what the method can do and what the method cannot do, because no method is perfect. And this is saying what are the strengths and the weaknesses of this particular method, and then, of course, you will have to, in order to compensate for the weaknesses, you will have to use quite completely different methods to gain the insight that this method cannot deliver. So you always have to be a little bit skeptical about methods. The last element, which I haven't really done very deeply yet, is to go back to the interview transcripts and to, as I say here, put some qualitative meat on the quantitative bones. The quantitative bones, that's just the typology. Here it is. But then you can go back. Each informant, you know which informant belongs to which type, and then you can go back and look at what they actually said, and you can then provide a deeper picture of each type by going back to these qualitative data. But I'll just show you now what the types were. The seven types. First, we have a type here which we call the traditional versatile news user. There were 9 people in this group. This is the top 5 of their news consumption. As I told you before, there's really a top 25. We have all the 25 listed news media for each type, but here I only give you five, the five top ones. So this group, for this group, the most important news medium is television news. Second is national newspapers. Third is radio news in the morning. Four is TV current affairs of the serious kind, not the entertaining kind. And the fifth is the internet news sites. The second type is quite different. As you can see, we call them the popular digital news user. There were four people in our sample. These people have the social net media as their most important news source, followed by the internet news sites. Then comes mainstream television, then television current affairs of the light entertaining kind, and free dailies in the fifth place. The third type is very similar to the second type. We call them the depth digital news user. So they go more, a bit more into depth than this one. They have the same two at the top, but in the reverse order. Internet news first, then social net media. Then comes mainstream TV news again, internet cultural sites, and free dailies. The fourth type we call is a type which relies mostly on newspapers. It's not that newspapers are at the top. You can see here they have mainstream TV news, then they have tabloid newspapers and free newspapers. Then we have the internet news sites and the TV current affairs of the light type. This may be difficult to register for you, of course, so I can also offer you, if you want to have a copy of the slides, you can also get that. The fifth type is the heavy newspaper reader, we call it. There were only three of those in our sample. They have the national newspapers at the top, followed by TV news and text TV news and internet news, but then specialized newspapers are also in their top five. These niche newspapers, which can be economic newspapers or cultural newspapers or something very specialized. Then the sixth type is called the news update addict. These are people who have 24-hour TV news at the top, followed by mainstream TV, text TV, internet news, and social net media. The last seventh type is called the regional omnivore. We call it regional because these people are mainly from the regional cities where we did the study. And omnivore it means to eat everything. So they take a very diverse news diet. And so they have mainstream TV news. Then, of course, they are regional. So they have regional dailies here in a very high position, and TV current affairs of the serious kind. And as the only group, they have the family weekly magazines in the top five. And then they have the internet news sites also in a very high, as in fifth place. So this is the typology. Then, of course, you can ask, well, can we say anything about democratic implications based on such a typology? These seven shopping carts. And, of course, you cannot say very much about democracy, how media are a democratic resource on the basis of just this study. But I'm trying to take out a few things that I think could be related to democratic practices. So what I ask here is, do the Danes constellations of news media qualify them as well-informed, competent citizens? Well, depends on the answer to this question, depends on the answer to another question, which is, what does the news portfolio of a competent citizen look like? What do you require in order to be able to label someone, this is a competent citizen? Well, some people would say, still, I think, that in order to be a good citizen, you need to read a daily newspaper. It's been the traditional big news medium, serious news medium in Denmark. So only three of the groups have this quality newspaper in the top five. So if this is the criterion, you would have to say no, they're not qualified as well-informed citizens. But then if you look at some of the other findings, we found that all the groups, all seven groups, have the public service TV news in the top five. And I don't know how familiar you are with this notion of European public service television, but if you think of something like the BBC as a model for public service television, the Danish public service television is very similar to the BBC model. And there have been studies which have found, for instance by James Curran and some other people, that people who live in countries with public service media systems have more public knowledge. So, and Denmark was one of the countries that was studied here. So this would indicate that it's a good thing for democracy that people are watching public service TV news to this extent, because TV news, public service TV news, is delivering quality news provision. We also noticed, maybe you did too as I was going through the types, that all the groups, all seven, had Danish internet news in the top five. That's another error there. Internet news in the top five. And as I said earlier on, in Denmark, the internet news mainly comes from the large news institutions, the newspapers and the public service broadcasting houses. So this is also then the internet news in a Danish context in 2009 is also a fairly quality dominated news source. So in this would tend to answer yes to this top question. The last aspect has to do with, maybe you also noticed that there are five groups which have a high score for the social media sites. And although the social media sites are used in Denmark as probably here for many, many other things than news and information, they do require that people have considerable digital competences, digital literacies, in order to use the social media. So this would also tend to answer this question as yes, because in democracy of the future, it is going to be very important to have digital literacies in order to be able to function as a citizen also. So on the whole, I would think that on balance, the profiles that we found in our study would seem to indicate that the Danes do use the news media as well-informed, competent citizens. But of course, as I said, we have, I think this, I'll just go back to that. No, where are we? That one. We have to go back to the interviews and look more qualitatively at what people are actually saying about how they're using the news media in order to answer the question about democracy. Yeah. I think I'll stop here. There are many other things you could say about this study. One thing that I also sometimes emphasize as one of the advantages of doing this kind of typology is that it makes it easier to do comparative studies. If you do similar studies in different countries, the typologies are quite easy to compare, and therefore to do cross-cultural research, this method will also be very interesting. And right now, it looks as if there will be in Europe some similar parallel studies which will be done in order to draw similar portraits of the citizens, the consumer citizens in Belgium, for instance, and maybe in other countries, and thereby we can get a better understanding of how different cultures had different cross-media news consumption patterns. So that's something that I'll tell you about next time I drop by.